You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I've spoken to a gentleman, Bill Eddy, who is a lawyer, a therapist, a mediator, and co-founder and chief innovation officer at the High Conflict Institute. And among other things, we speak about that, the High Conflict Institute, and Bill and his partners work with bullies. He's the author of over 20 books and manuals about managing relationships in situations with high conflict people and bullies. He trains lawyers, judges, mediators, and therapists worldwide in managing high conflict situations. And now he's written a book out, I believe today, called Our New World of Adult Bullies, How to Spot Them and How to Stop Them. And for all sorts of reasons, some of which are obvious to anybody listening, it's a timely book on a timely subject, and I hope you enjoy it. I certainly did. Hello, everybody. This is Curiosity Invited, and welcome. My name's David Bryan, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with a gentleman who I have just met, named Bill Eddy, and he has recently written a book. I will mention briefly, I've just done it in the introduction, but he's a lawyer, he's a therapist, he is a licensed social worker, licensed clinical social worker, a lawyer, practicing lawyer.
I did for 15 years. Yep.
Yeah. And he has written a book that is timely, we think. We'll find out. All my assumptions about that are wrong, but and the book is called Our New World of Adult Bullies. And the full title is How to Spot Them and How to Stop Them. And the other thing you should know about him, Bill Eddy, is he is the founder, co-founder, and chief innovative officer, I believe, of the High Conflict Institute, which I had never heard about, but it's fascinating and hopeful. Let's start there. So this, I mean, unless you really want to just dive right into the book, and that's fine too, but this High Conflict Institute, what did that come about?
In 2000, yeah. So in 2008, I had actually met the year before a woman named Megan Hunter. She worked with the Arizona Supreme Court on family law issues, and I was a family lawyer in San Diego, and we realized that there's many high conflict cases, maybe 20% of cases, where families just stay stuck in anger with each other, and especially fighting over the children for years and years. And so we wanted to train professionals, lawyers, judges, mediators, therapists, how to manage these cases better. And I had developed some methods of calming the conflicts. And so we joined forces in January of 2008, we formed High Conflict Institute. And since then, we've been training not just family law professionals, but all lawyers, judges, criminals, civil, but also human resources, law enforcement, government agencies, workplace. So we really, everywhere that there's high conflict, people are stuck in conflict and need to calm down, that's where we'll go.
And did you develop those methods or discover, realize them because it helped you in your work as a lawyer or as a therapist or both? Or
yeah, so actually, real quick, I was a therapist first, and then I became a lawyer. But throughout, I have been doing mediation. So I've actually done mediation for 40 years. Mm-hmm. First 12 years of that as a therapist, next 30 years of that as a lawyer. And it was in in mediation that I developed one of our favorite techniques called EAR statements, E-A-R, which I can explain when it fits in the discussion.
Yeah.
And then that was 2004. In 2007, I was giving a training, and a couple of judges said, how do we stop these terrible hostile emails that divorcing parents send to each other? And I explained to them they needed to be brief, informative, friendly, and firm.
And that's where we developed
BIF, yeah. One of our favorite techniques. And now we have four little books about how to use BIF in calming email conversations.
Mm.
And then since joining forces with Megan Hunter, starting High Conflict Institute, developed some other simple techniques too to help calm conflicts, help people move forward in their lives. Yeah, that's a long answer.
No, that's fine. Did the focus on bullies come out of that? Or has that been has it been brewing for a long time?
Yes, it's been brewing for a long time. So what's happened is in 1980, when I was trained to be a child and family therapist, I first learned about personality disorders. And personality disorders, several different types, but basically being stuck in their personality development and having a narrow range of behavior, but also not being aware of their impact on other people. And some people with personality disorders, they find were domineering, vindictive, and intrusive. And I dealt with child abuse cases, domestic violence, things like that, which essentially were bullies. And when we started High Conflict Institute, we talked about high conflict personalities that might have personality disorders or just be high conflict, stuck in conflict, and essentially bullying the people around them. And so I decided in writing this book to just come out and say it. These are bullies, but I would say I've been studying bullies in one form or another for about 40 years.
And the people stuck in high conflict, are they that way? Are they stuck there because it's rewarding, because it's effective, because there is some quirk in their, in developmentally?
I think it's that it's the development of personalities, and that everybody tries out bullying as kids. You know, you bully your siblings, your neighbor kids, kids at school. But 90% of kids don't do that once they're adults. They've learned that's not okay and have internal restraints. You know, I'm having this thought about this person, but I'm not going to act on it. Whereas as kids, people have a thought and act on it, and then they go, oops.
Right.
Yeah. So I really think it is developmental, that they develop a bully personality, essentially, which is what the book is about, but they develop it early in life. So maybe they're born with tendencies like that, or early childhood is terrible and abusive, and they learn that you're going to be abused or abuse other people. Or early childhood was indulgent, and they were allowed to bully other people, bully their siblings. Maybe parents said, hey, that's cool, when they should have said, hey, cut it out. And so those three reasons seem primarily, but the current state of the world around them says, be careful or go for it. And the current state of the world is telling bullies to go for it. Look at what other people are getting away with. And that encourages them, sadly.
Yeah, I'm here. But is there some reason to think that it is on the upswing? Or is there some evidence that says, you know, basically there's been this similar distribution forever. Now it's just the world has realized that, you know, you can sell more newspapers, more commercials, more whatever, because you got more eyeballs, because people really like that. Or has it been there all along? And
well, my thinking, because I think it's personality based, is that about 5% of people have a cluster B personality disorder. And those are the ones that research says can be domineering, vindictive, and intrusive. So there's some that's just kind of built into society. I think they've always been with us, but generally society said, hey, cut it out. And so people have ratcheted back some of their tendencies most of the time. But if the environment, like they're around other bullies and say, hey, let's go bully this guy, then they're encouraged and they act out more of that. But I think today we probably may be getting closer to 10% instead of 5% of people who were bullies. And by the way, not everybody with a cluster B personality disorder diagnosis is a bully. It's more that they're stuck in their way of behaving.
This cluster B, it's not familiar to me. What does that mean?
So in the Diagnostic Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM, currently the fifth edition DSM-5, they talk about personality disorders. There are 10 personality disorders that are recognized, and they're in three clusters, A, B, and C, and they have common characteristics. So cluster B is narcissistic personality, borderline personality, antisocial, and histrionic personality. Some of those people have a higher likelihood of being bullies because of this domineering, vindictive, intrusive nature. The manual identifies them as dramatic, erratic, and emotional. And so those four personalities kind of have similar tendencies, and that's overlaps with bully behavior, and it helps us understand that they're stuck with this behavior. It isn't a conscious choice so much as this is who they are and who they've been growing up and into adulthood. So it isn't that you said something or I said something and suddenly someone becomes a bully. They come into events in today's world and maybe take the risk and say or do something or don't, depending on whether the world looks like they're going to reinforce it.
The timing of the book, the description of the, in some of the stuff that I've read, not in the book, sadly, but it is the day you're describing in so many ways, you know, one of the presidential candidates to be. But that's not the genesis of why you wrote this book.
No, I started this book the first year of COVID, and two things happened. One is I was seeing conflicts happening that I wasn't used to seeing, and including in the political world about vaccinations, masks, and all this. Right. And people were becoming quite polarized. And I was seeing similar patterns, because polarization generally comes, it's an emotional process, and often comes from bullied leaders, whether it's in the workplace, in the family, in politics. And so bullies were feeding that, and many different bullies. And I'm not going to comment and say any candidate is or isn't a bully, right. But the trend to kind of divide people and create this was going through my mind. And I also had more time to reflect because I couldn't go anywhere. And so I was thinking about the last 40 years and the patterns of high conflict behavior, high conflict personalities, and that basically they're bullies. And while I've talked about high conflict personalities mostly to professionals, what they really are is people with tendencies to bullying behavior. And so I wanted to write a book for the general public about this set of patterns of behavior. And so that's really where it got started.
Got it. Yeah. And it's hard to imagine, maybe you can comment on this or not, but it's hard to imagine that when somebody in such a high profile position, take your pick who, exhibits behaviors that you've been describing, I suspect it's it's actually, you know, to some people it is repulsive, and to other people it's probably very appealing, and especially younger kids, you know, well, look, if the, look, here's my example, like, right, that, how could that be bad?
Right. Exactly. And that's where bullies as leaders at any level are role models. And so we're seeing today, and I must say, in the media, what I call the high emotion media, where there's images of bullying behavior, bullying on airplanes, bullying in the store, bullying on the street. When you see a lot of that, that's really, it's in many ways entertaining for adults, but training for kids. This is the new normal. And kids say, well, why should I be in trouble? I'm doing what that guy did on TV yesterday.
Sure, yeah, exactly. Look at that guy.
And so it really is role models. And I have a chapter on bully leaders and talk about them in many different settings and how they influence, you know, like, say, the workplace. There was some research by the Workplace Bullying Institute saying that with COVID, that there's an increase of, you know, people, about 30% of people said they were bullied in the workplace, and 43% of people said they were being bullied online in the context of their work. And so the pandemic opened some of this up, but, yeah, you know, we're seeing role models on our screens of bullying behavior and experiencing it more. So I think that's what's happening.
And one of the things that I read, I'm not sure where it was, but I believe there was something that suggested that not all bullies, and in fact, most bullies don't necessarily know that they are bullying, and that and that the opposite is, I'm not sure if it's the opposite, most victims, many victims of bullies don't think of what's going on with them as they are being bullied. And so that's sort of hard to wrap my head around. And I imagine for others as well. So could you unpack that a little bit?
I do. I specifically address that in the book. And let me first say that it seems from my experience, and it's not what people think, is that most bullies aren't really aware of their own behavior, of themselves. They don't reflect and say, well, should I do this or shouldn't I do this? They're acting out of their personalities. Things feel normal to them, maybe even necessary to them. Well, I had to do that. Look at what she did or what he did. Only they didn't have to do what they did, and they may have blown up something 10 times worse than it was because somebody looked at them cross-eyed, and so they did something real. Well, I can't be disrespected, so I had to punch them in the nose,
well,
you know?
Right, sure.
And things like that. But also, victims don't like to think of themselves as victims. So, and I talk about, for example, domestic violence in the book. And many victims, or we like to use the word survivors, if they survive, don't think of what's happening to them as bullying. They think of it also as normal. And it, they may think, this is what happens in relationships. It just shows how much he loves me, how intense, how controlling he is. Well, that's not love. That's controlling behavior, and that can become quite bullying. So it's people just aren't really familiar with this, and a lot of it goes on in, behind closed doors, and that's why I wanted to write the book, because it's really going on more than people realize.
Okay, so someone doesn't necessarily know that they're bullying, and then it gets pointed out to them. There's 5 to 10% of the people who are doing that are in fact bullies, and so don't care even when it's pointed out to them. Because I would imagine, you know, look, I've done something, you know, I was in education for years, and sometimes I said something to a kid or to a, you know, to a teacher, and you know, sometimes I caught myself, and sometimes they pointed something out to me, and it's like, oh, geez, I don't want to do that at all. You're absolutely right. I am really sorry. So there was, I guess that was, is that bullying or bullies can't
oh, that's,
choice.
Can that's or being, that's being healthy. In other words, a healthy person.
Could you tell my wife that?
It's healthy to reflect on what we do, and everybody makes mistakes. So the thing that's a healthy person says, oops, yeah, you're right. Sorry about that. I shouldn't have said that. I'd say that at least once a week to people that I work with. You know, oops, okay. Or, you know, maybe I didn't let something happen that could have happened. So, you know, it's part, that's part of how guilt and shame and sorry help us get along as human beings. The problem for bullies is they don't look at themselves. And there's two questions people ask me sometimes, you know, am I a bully or do I have a high conflict personality or personality disorder? And I say, can you ask yourself these two questions? The first is, what's my part in this problem? And the second is, what can I do differently in the future? Mm. Bullies don't ask themselves that. They like, what do you mean about me? It's all about you. You know, look at what you did. You know, everything I did was fine. It's you that was the problem. I'm just pointing out how stupid you are or whatever it is. And so bullies just are totally focused outward on other people, other people's behavior, et cetera. Now, they're aware of what they want, but they're not aware of their behavior affecting other people. And I might add, if we go back to the three personalities that I see most common with bullies, let's say the narcissistic bully lacks empathy. And so they don't necessarily care that somebody else feels bad. So empathy is one of the brakes that keeps us together as human beings. Antisocial personalities lack remorse. Not only don't they don't care, but they may even enjoy hurting other people and get kind of a kick out of that. So they also lack those restraints. People with borderline personalities lack emotional self-control. And so they may not plan to do something, but their emotions say, you have to do this. And so they may become very aggressive, like someone wants to leave the house and they knock them down and, you know, keep them from going. That's like domestic violence.
Yeah.
And many people that perpetrate domestic violence, especially male perpetrators of that, have borderline personality traits. And so they lack this emotional self-control. So the breaks that most people have, this 5 to 10% of people don't seem to have, and that allows them to act this way, and they can change. Some of them do change. Some of them get counseling, get coaching, and can stop themselves after that. But most don't seek that because they don't think they have a problem.
Well, and that points right to, I mean, I both enjoyed and had a lot of thinking about it. The cover drawing on your book. Oh, there you go.
And you can see the fish.
Right.
The little fish is getting away because the bully's now getting scared by all the other little fish that now look bigger than the bully.
Right.
And that's really the theme of the book, is often we have to get together to stop the bully.
And
alone, you may not be able to do that. So go get help. Mm-hmm. And we get all the little fish together, we can stop a bully. I believe that.
And you do. And that's the question, because I think it's one thing to say that, but bullies can be intimidating. In fact, I think they probably frequently are intimidating. That's part of how it works.
Right.
And it takes a certain sort of overcoming or moving through that to move to the point where, you know, you say to the other fish, hey, this guy, we need to do something. Even that, attempting to fish up can be a mountain too high to climb in the face of bullying. And so at what point does it escalate to something or not, right? I mean, how do you know when, how do you know when you reach a point of like, how do people know that they're, you know, I need help with this?
Right. It's usually the person who's the target of the bully needs to speak up and speak up to other people. So in my book, I've got 60 examples of bullying behavior. Most of them were, was stopped, although it may have been stopped after some damage was done. But it often takes the individual who's the target not allowing it to be an isolated situation. Mm-hmm. And so, see, many bullies say, and don't tell anybody. If you tell anybody, I'll kill your family, you right. know? And sure. people are, oh, my goodness, you know? So secrecy is a big part of bullying. And that's part of why I want to expose these patterns so mm-hmm. people know, really, this is how bullies operate. And a lot of the examples I had to use were public examples, things from the news and history and such, so that you can see the dynamics and recognize if it's happening to you. And what I tell people is don't be alone with this. Go talk to somebody, almost anybody, so that you don't believe it's your fault and keep it tied up inside of you. So getting help is one of the first steps. It may just be someone you can talk to who helps you realize it's a terrible situation and it's not your fault.
Right.
No one deserves to be bullied. But you may then figure out, who do I need to go to? Like in the workplace, do I need to go to human resources or a higher up manager or executive? Because some of the bullying may be your manager.
Right.
And sure. In the old sure. days, they said, tell your manager if you're being bullied. And it's like, yeah, well, that's who's bullying me.
I've got a problem. So,
right. Yeah, so you can go to almost anybody in a lot of big organizations to report this and get some help with it.
Yeah, yeah. Although that, I mean, certain examples stand out as, you know, sort of notorious, in some ways valorized for their bad behavior. You know, because well, they somehow, that accomplishes something, leaving a wake of victims in their path.
Well, that's true. And what we're seeing today, especially in what I call the high emotion media, is we're seeing bullies get a lot of attention and look like they're cool. Maybe they've built a business that's made $1 billion.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, they're a bully and they made $1 billion. Maybe that's the way
hey,
to really make
strategy.
Money.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so it really, I think, is confusing to people because the rules seem different, that some people can be bullies and I can't. And what we need to say is nobody should be a bully. And we can set limits. And what's interesting is when people set limits on bullies, they actually may be more effective at what they do. And I think of Steve Jobs, you know, with iPhones and iPads and computers. He had a big reputation in the San Francisco Bay Area for oh. being a bully, but he had a management team around him that helped keep him in check. And they'd say, hey, Steve, you and I need to go for a walk right now. And Steve's getting ready to fire like 200 people because he didn't like how the division, you know, how the product looked. Right. And Steve, we need to go for a walk and calm him down and come back. Okay, here's what you need to do instead of just firing the whole division. Things like that. So yeah. Bullies, if they're restrained, may be contributing to society, may be helpful people to have around. Mm. But if they're not restrained, that's when they really get in trouble.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if there's if it's in the book or if you've thought about, you know, what you just said, which is, you know, how do we stop it from happening? Or is it stoppable because it's something about their personality? Is it a person? Is personality could be formed by all sorts of things, right? I mean, there are laws in place to attempt to curb certain sorts of behaviors, obviously. But is there a solution that's larger than the individual?
Oh, yeah. Well, we believe a lot in coaching and like executive coaching or employee coaching. And with our institute, we developed a method called New Ways for Work Coaching. And we teach some real basic communication skills. You know, I mentioned at the beginning the BIF, brief, informative, friendly, and firm emails, are a method we've taught whole workplaces, you know, companies, and people get certified as BIF competent, you know. And so that helps calm things. Mm. And bullies, you know, a lot of bullies could go this way or that way. And the environment does make a difference. So if it's like, hey, cut it out, they can cut it out, at least to some extent. Mm-hmm. And we find, like with coaching, that maybe half of bullies will rein in their behavior and be able to keep their jobs, and maybe half just can't change. They're too severe. And so coaching not only helps people change, but it helps figure out who's not going to change. Mm. And in the workplace, people often wait too long to remove a bully employee. Like, they may wait 2 or 3 years in hopes that they'll change. But one of the characteristics of bullies is they don't restrain themselves. Right. And they don't just change. So wishful thinking doesn't work.
But is there a way to spot those bullies who are not going to be easily or at all changed? That's the question I'm asking, is that are there ways for people or professionals to sort of, are there clues about behaviors that, you know what, this person's not going to be able to change? Is that something a person can spot, or it's really just about endurance and time?
Well, I've been asked that. I did some trainings with some high-tech companies, and occasionally they consult with me and say, we have a manager who's being a bully. Let me describe their behavior and tell me if you think it's hopeless and we should fire them or keep them on. And I often recommend 3 coaching sessions. And the New Ways for Work coaching method I described has 3 to 8 sessions, so minimum of 3 sessions, which they could have with an employee assistance person who's mm-hmm. trained in the method. And I'll say, and see what happens. In 3 sessions, see if you see a change that looks hopeful or sufficient, in which case you may be able to keep the person and keep an eye on them to reinforce the skills that they should change. Or it's going to be clear they're making no progress. And that tells you right there. Because in many ways, I think people either tolerate bullies or fire them too soon without giving them a chance to change, to see if they can behave better. Mm-hmm. So that's our approach.
I'm thinking of a couple of instances of, you know, people who worked in an organization I was leading. And, in some ways they made it easy because they was sort of put them in a situation where, you know, look, this behavior has to change. I know you deeply believe in it, but it's abusive to other people. And so insisted on periodic sessions with whether it was a counselor or a coach or something like that. And how they made it easy was just the idea that somebody was going to mandate attending to themselves, they would quit on the spot. And on the one hand, I felt sorry because what a shame, because they did have skills. They did have, you know, value. And on the other hand, it was, oh, good, I dodged that bullet. They made the decision. I didn't have to.
It's not unusual when we consult with companies and organizations. Sometimes we give a training in simple conflict resolution methods and then meet with the management and maybe even interview people on a team. And from that, conclude there's a couple people need some coaching. And we'll tell the supervisor, a couple of people we think could use some coaching, and they'll tell them, and one of them will say, great, I'll take it. And the other says, then I quit.
I'm out of it.
And that's right. Or I'm going to retire now, like 2 years early or something. Yeah. But it's not unusual. Bullies don't like someone else to be in charge. They like to dominate and sometimes destroy other people and entities. So having a supervisor looking over their shoulder is just a bridge too far for them.
Yeah, exactly. Unacceptable. Okay. I mean, I really think that the high conflict institute is such an interesting thing. The idea that there's a bank of information someplace that is helpful in a wide swath of situations, and specifically with people who are, you know, where the amplitude is turned up a bunch.
Yeah. Well, we're really proud of what we've done in the last 15 years, and we're really worldwide now. So next week I'll be teaching in Canada. Last week, where was I? I'm in San Diego, but I was at a conference in Boston. Be in New York at the end of the month.
That's great.
But also, most years, myself or my business partner, Megan, are in Australia for a couple weeks. In fact, right now, she's teaching in Australia. Surprisingly, and because of the internet, our reach seems to be quite far. So I've been in Europe. Megan's taught in Europe. She's taught in South Africa. We've just, Canada, Australia, New Zealand.
And would you say that the so I recognize you're not only dealing with bullies, but that the patterns of human behavior that you discovered, came across, got a handle on here are widespread across numerous cultures, even
absolutely
different cultures, really.
Everywhere we go, including people from different cultures, especially like in Canada, some of the native people or first peoples, they call it, may say, with some of our techniques, they say you maybe soften that and emphasize this, but they all have high conflict people. They all have bullies. Mm-hmm. And so it's just fascinating. And the books I've written, I get feedback. People say, you must have met my wife, or you must have met my boss, because it's really human behavior. And I think it's part of the human personality gene pool that we have. 1% of people are going to be bullies without the restraints of empathy, remorse, emotional self-control. And that in a way, they contribute to society because they push us because they don't care. And so they push us in new directions. And I come back to Steve Jobs. He pushed us into this, the smartphone direction. And the guy was a bully.
Either a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, well, there's mixed reviews.
The game's not over yet.
That's right. But what happens is they push us in new directions. And those could be good or could be bad, but either the direction they push us in or organizing ourselves to resist them, mm-hmm. both of those seem to be part of human progress. And so this is where they maybe contribute. So they may push us to do better, but they can't stop themselves. And so people say, well, shouldn't we just try to eliminate bullies or lock them all up? No, because they have a lot to offer, but they can't stop themselves. So what they need is restraints, not to be eliminated, but to be restrained in these excessive behaviors.
Right. That's interesting. And it's interesting and very generous of spirit coming, hearing that.
Yeah. Well, I like to say, I'll go a little further with that and say, I think they're ancient personalities. That these personalities really survived and thrived thousands of years ago, because that's how you got people together. And, you fought a war and your team won the war and had a better idea and all of that. But they don't work well in a society where we consider ourselves equal, where happy relationships are equal relationships. That people have to pay attention to how they get along. So, but some people are born with these tendencies, and mm-hmm. that's what makes me think this is part of human success. And I tried to figure out why. And I think it's this pushing us. They push us forward or backward. They save us from destroying ourselves sometimes by going, that's a bad idea. And we're not going to go there.
Yeah.
And other times we've got this great idea that will help people live 10 years longer.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that's possible.
Well, Bill Eddy, thank you so much for spending time. Now I'm eager for your book to be out. One more day, a day late. I mean, day early.
Yeah, people can go get it now.
Yes, exactly, as we speak.
So, yes. So, well, thanks so much for having me on. I totally enjoyed discussing this with you.
And I will make sure to put up both the name of the book and the picture of the book and the High Conflict Institute URL, which I think is fascinating again. And again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.